Mr. Willis, rail 11.
So if we just talk about the canteen.
Yes.
Messing business.
Well, can I go on now?
Yes, on you go.
Well, the canteen in the ship, of course, was brought there by the NAFI, the National Air Force and Army or something. Well, in my day, it was the NAC, the Navy and Army Canteen Board. And the canteen was in the ship where they had their own place where all their stuff was, and they had a store down below. Now, if the mess was... I told you about the bread, did I?
You told me about the bread.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, if the caterer of the mess was generally one of the senior hands or the leading hand in the mess, and he used to have his canteen or his repayment book, and he'd say to them, "Now, what are we having for breakfast?" They'd talk around. "Well, all right, they're all right. They're going to have eggs and bacon," we'll say. Right. He writes out the chit, takes it to the canteen, and he gets so many rashers and so many eggs according to the number of men in the mess. Anything else they want, such as lard, fat, fags, fruit, anything at all, if they want it, they can put down for it and buy it. And then at the end of the month, and each man's allowed so much mess savings, that mess savings is collected by the caterer of the mess once a month. And at the end of the month, he gets a bill from the canteen, and that's going to be paid. Then what's left out of his mess savings, if any, he shares amongst the men. If there's none left and that some's got to be made up, he gets so much from each man in the mess. 2 bob, perhaps, 5 bob, perhaps, 6 bob, so on. Well, that's the canteen working. and that sort of thing ends. Now, as regards their eggs and bacon and all that sort of thing, or whatever did they have, they bring that up to the galley. And the cooks there cook it. Which, whoever's on duty, the cook that's on duty, he starts cooking the breakfast. He's at midnight. He's got to, because he's got so many. The last ship I was in, they used to put it in steam chests with a gentle heat on to keep it warm. Right, that was served out in the morning. Then again, over and above the food that was served, allotted to them from the Navy, free, and that, anything extra, go to the canteen. And so on. Eh? And you had repayment bread, I give you that. Right, that was that. Now what else?
Now what I wanted to get from you was how some people, like who were in charge of the catering in the canteen, in the mess, would take the money but wouldn't really let it... would try and keep it, dishonestly keep the money.
No, about that corruption... The only time, you see, in a ship, you can't do that. It's impossible. Because anybody in the mess, if the caterer of the mess was to say, "Well, look here, chaps, we're down this month, and I should want 5 bob each," every man in that mess will want to know why. Immediately. So the caterer can't do anything.
What about the story of the man Lavender? The one instance where this did happen. Tell me about that, just to show how it could happen.
It happened all the time I was in the Duke of Wellington, and that was from the August to the November.
That was it happened in the barracks, really?
No, in the ship.
In the ship.
Yeah, in the Duke of Wellington, you see. We were allowed mess savings, but we never saw it. And what we got as regards food, and that was... But it didn't take all that amount of money that we were allowed. So nothing was said. Mess savings were never mentioned. If anyone did kick up a fuss about the mess savings, no matter who it was, they were taken into Mr. Lavender. What he said to them, we don't know. Because there'd only be three there. That were Mr. Lavender, the chief cook in charge, and the man making his complaint. Right. That's about a week or so later, he'd be on draft. Right? Know what I mean by that, don't you? That was the corruption in the old Duke of Wellington.
What scale was it on? What sort of scale did this thing happen on?
What do you mean? The amount of money?
Amount of money and how often?
I can't tell you that. I never did know how much mess savings we were allowed. No, I couldn't tell you that.
Mr. Lavender, in this case, the man who would get you drafted if you complained, he was actually a friend of your uncle's in Portsmouth, I believe, wasn't he? Yeah. What was the connection? How did that act in your case?
Oh, it didn't. it didn't work in any way. It was nothing to my advantage. The only thing was, my uncle knew Mr. Lemon said, You've got a young cook's mate there called Reg Willison. I said, yeah, well, that was the only connection. That was all. Just to say that, because Uncle Arthur had told him that I was his nephew.
It made no difference to you in his...
No, not at all. Not a... As a matter of fact, I shouldn't have cared for him to interfere. As regards that sort of thing, I never did like that. I didn't want no help from anybody at all. What I got myself, with the exception, of course, being made a first-class petty officer 12 months before my time, then I earned that through helping Mr. Jago bring about the real general messing.
Can you tell me, I was going to ask you about that, can you just tell me what happened here, what you did in this connection and working with Mr. Jago, and tell me about him too.
Well, he was a chief PO. He was a very nice man to work with. And he was a born organiser. Right. I was sent to the Impregnable where it was just starting, and I was his second in command. And he'd say, the paymaster and him would get together and work out a sort of a menu for the boys, and then Jago used to come up and tell me all about it. Well, then I work with him. That kid's next door. That's the daughter's children. And then I'd given a menu, and I knew just what I had to do. And that was the preparing of a certain meal. Where there was breakfast, dinner, or supper. And that was worked on with and attended to by the cook's mates. And that, because you superintended it and you helped yourself, you had to. I couldn't stand by and see them just doing it. That I had to help myself. So anyway, that's how that was worked. Then when he came aboard next morning, he would have a look around, so and so and so and so. Yeah, well, so. I know we had very... You don't want to hear that, do you?
Not if I can help it. Yes, Mr. Bowen. We'll carry on.
Like one day, we had a very severe thunderstorm and that, and I had half a churn of milk there, which suddenly went sour. Well, of course, I couldn't help that, so anyhow, I reported it to him. Oh, that's all right, Willis. Don't worry. We'll use that. And sour milk's very good for making cake. Right. So that was utilised. The cake was made and served out to the boys. That was a bit of extra. And I don't know how long was I there. I suppose I must have been there about 12 months, near enough. And I left. Jacob went into barracks. He was made a warrant officer, and he was in charge of the barracks, and that's where he remained until the day he died. He also started in there, because they had the general mess in there, but when he went back there and got made a warrant, of course, he improved on things. And all the basements there, that's where all the bags and that of the men that were in barracks were kept, and the chests of the chief POs with their clothing and that, because the chief POs allowed a chest. And that was converted into a restaurant. And in that restaurant there were seated 3,000 men at one meal. There used to be tables there, each seating 10 men. Because these flats were tremendous. They go practically the full length of barracks. And each table had a seaman appointed to it as a waiter, which he'd done so long, and somebody else would take on, give him a chance to rest. And the men would go in at midday, start their meal, and as they sat down, and that, so this seaman from the galley across, there was a sort of a bridge where the stuff was carried across, and he put their dinners down in front of them, and because it was served out on each plate in the galley, and then he'd carry them over, and they'd sit there and have their dinner, and that was that.